have only 20 minutes, so I have to probably skip much of the paper. And I'm glad that I am the last one, because then some of the background has been taken up and discussed by the previous speakers. My paper is about the religious ideas of Rizal. Of course, we know that he was writing at a time that our country was ruled together by the civil government from Spain through Mexico, and the institution of the church was very powerful, in fact, intertwined with the civil government. In fact, the authorities were the ones who were prodded by the friar orders that meted out the death sentence on Rizal. At the same time, the church conceived of itself as the sole representative of the divine order on earth. The friar orders believed that they were the guardians of public order and morals and the source of all knowledge, and were and claimed that unlike the civilian government, who was indecisive, remote, and weak, they were the only effective instruments that kept the people of the Philippine archipelago devoted Catholics and therefore loyal and obedient subjects of the colonial government. By equating the church and the friar orders with Spanish civil authority, any criticism, any attempt to disparage the friars was ipso facto insurrection and rebellion. And this is one of the charges brought against Rizal. We should be very grateful to Father Horacio de la Costa, who made a very detailed transcription of the procedures of the trial of Rizal and should be a very good legal reference for our College of Law, who tend to overlook some of the historical records in the development of concept of justice in our country. Today, in 2011, narration of these events deserve repetition for up to the late 30s, 50s, and to the 1970s, during the height of the Cold War. Accusations of the same vein, like lack of religion, atheists and agnostics, were targets of persecution. Much of the established church marshaled against the native folk religions. The colorums were attacked and denigrated, and against labor, against peasant movements, and the sympathizers among the intelligentsia. Many of the intelligentsia were put in jail because they were not devout Catholics. Dr. Rizal did not write an entire treatise on religion, neither did he write exclusively on religion. Rizal was no theologian. His thoughts on religion are articulated along with his ideas about what is just and humane social order for our country and the rest of the world. His religious ideas were formulated as a result of experiences, his education, his vast readings, and as a consequence of attempts to wrestle with the social, political, and economic problems of the times. In this sense, his religious perspective is humanistic and existential. He was not concerned with the subtle points of scholastic theology, and to him, religion is intimately connected with daily life in the way our institutions work and the unfolding historical processes. Above all, as he matured, religion to him should serve to inspire human beings to strive for self-improvement, for a peaceful, tranquil life on this earth and not on the next, as taught by the clergy. He opposed the church and the friar orders for obstructing all peaceful means to uplift the Filipino people from servitude, from denying their God-given rights for freedom of thought, and to analyze the sources of ignorance and injustice. The religious ideas can be drawn from two novels, Noli, Fili, El Flubustristo. In his many, many articles in La Solidaridad, he also contributed to some of the newspapers in Madrid and Barcelona, and of course, his essays, letters to his family, colleagues, friends, to Ferdinand Blumentritt, quite a large number, and most of all, towards his very mature life, to his former mentor, Jesuit Father Pablo Pastels. The latter, using the pseudonym Manuel Garcia Barsanaliana, wrote extensive polemics regarding the so-called Rizal's retraction and justified the hero's execution as a means for him to repent his sins, I quote, to repent his sins of arrogance, and thereby allowed him to attain, quote, eternal salvation, unquote. Like Marcelo del Pilar, Graciano Lopez Haina, and other colleagues of the propaganda movement who were in Europe, they imbibed European Enlightenment, but this was quite selective from the point of view of Rizal. As a medical student, he, in the University of Madrid and in Heidelberg, Germany, his wide-ranging studies in ethnography, anthropology, and history, Rizal absorbed the methods of scientific inquiry, experimentation, objective evaluation of facts and information, and reliance on human reasoning rather than authority, particularly authority claimed by the clergy. Of special significance were his contacts with thinkers and leaders of the progressive libertarian movement in Spain and with other scholars, scientists, and philosophers in Europe. Among them, the Austrian, of course, Blumentritt is known to most of you. And of course, he read radical theological writings such as Félicité de Lamennais, who advocated that Christianity must serve the poor and disadvantaged on this earth and fight injustice, including those perpetuated by the church. Men like Miguel Moraita Sagrario, who was a former president of the University of Madrid, who was deposed because for espousing academic freedom. Then Rafael Labra, another progressive who was on the progressive side and attacked the established church in Spain. Manuel Luis Sorilla, another one, and Francisco P. Margal, who was president of the First Republic of 1873, who struggled to transform Spain's antiquated feudal system, and the moribund clergy were close friends of Rizal. P. Margal tried to stop Rizal's execution, but the ultra-conservative Spanish forces bent on keeping the colony prevailed. Rizal also avidly studied the writings of French philosophers like Voltaire, British progressive, and of course German Karl Kraus, whose ideas of religion and the role of religion of society thought of religion as one of the obstacles to progress of mankind. Was Rizal a heretic? Did he commit apostasy as claimed by his murderers? Was he a traitor to Spain? Rizal did not denounce Catholic Christianity per se, but its moribund institutions and the corruption and abuses of the representatives to this country. He remained a Catholic up to his death. He did not oppose religion, but the perversions, abuses, hypocrisy of the representatives of the church and the colonial government, which he portrayed vividly in his novels. He intended not to destroy the church, but its practices and make them consistent with the fundamental tenets of Christianity. He wanted affiliation with the progressive side of Spain that stood for equality, justice, brotherhood of all men. Compared to the anti-clerical Spaniards who assaulted friars, seized their properties, expelled them, torched churches and convents, Rizal's attack on the church, by comparison, was infinitely milder. What made the friars hysterical with vindictive anger was that Rizal, a Catholic and a graduate of Ateneo Municipal, espoused Christianity but rejected the church dogma about the divinity of Christ, which is fundamental dogma or doctrine in Christianity, divinity of Christ, his resurrection and salvation through faith alone. Moreover, Rizal defied church authoritarian methods that stifled freedom to think and express grievances. He wrote vehemently against corruption, abuses of the clergy that was widely disseminated in Spain and in the Philippines. And the Noli and Phil is full of very funny description of church practices and so on. His Christianity did not rely on intercession of prior orders, nor their institutions and organizations. Neither did he follow mandatory performances of religious rituals, which he depicted very well in Noli and Fili, the sacraments, ceremonies. He said, God does not require candles. He has more candles than the light of the sun. Instead, Christians should spend their time in the cultivation of reason and virtue. He taught that true Christians are those who practice love and charity among all humans. He believed that humans are essentially moral and that all human beings possess God-given capacity to think and reason for oneself. Ability to reason gives man the free will that makes him responsible for his decisions and actions. From this assumption follows that all human beings, regardless of race, social status, gender, are all equal. He emphasized this view in his letters to the women of Malolos and his Bulacan compatriots, and to his letters to his mother. For example, in 1886, Rizal explained that Christ was not first to proclaim the equality of all men, and he admired the earlier Christians, not the Christians today, he said, but who, although poor and persecuted, were steadfast in their faith. They remained faithful to the original teachings of Christ. I quote, "The poor gave Christianity its power because it was their friend, their religion. The rich did not accept it until much later. They mastered it, making it their instrument to subjugate the people," unquote. And as his criticism of the state of the church in the Philippines and Europe, he asked, why then is Christianity no longer the religion of the poor, of the unfortunate? Has it placed itself in the side of those who rule and dominate, unquote. Rizal agreed with P. E. Margal in condemning Spanish use of Christianity as the conquest of the Americas. Rizal argued that the conquest of the Philippines was waged in the name of Christianizing the so-called paganos salvajes paganos, tribus falgaje, tribus salvajes paganos. Thus, Christianity became the legitimizing philosophy of imperialism, not the liberating religion of Christ. Sensitive to the developments of neighboring Asian countries, Rizal, in his article published in La Soledad, there were about three of them, wrote about Ternate, which was conquered by the Spaniards in 1601. I quote, "Enslaving and killing the native people while singing Salve Regina." He asked, "Is this the way to make Filipinos love this God, making them slaves and toys they should be, while their hearts and consciousness cry out in protest?" Unquote. In dealing with the conditions of early Christians and the changes in Christian belief and practices, Rizal said that Christianity was part of history. Its institutions and peoples and conception of God also change and develop as history evolves. God's intervention in social life is manifested not in saints and revelations, but in the collective decisions and actions of human beings. To the extent that humans apply their God-given reason for moral and ethical ends, they exercise their free will for the social good. There is where God is found. In this sense, Rizal believes that God is a God of history, only when human reason works for common good. However, God to Rizal does not appear like a shower of manna or thunderbolt, or even as a venerable-looking judge to reward or punish good and bad deeds. As a scientist and a keen observer of nature and social processes, God to Rizal is not manifested in a single person, not even in Christ, or in a single revelation narrated in the Bible. He questioned also the veracity of the Genesis stories and some of the portions of the Bible, but revealed in the vastness and wonders of nature. This is the influence of the progressives in Britain and Germany. This position made Rizal close to denying the divinity of Jesus Christ. The central doctrine of Christianity. And this was vehemently criticized by Father Pastel's Society of Jesus. Rizal maintained that there is no direct divine intervention in history except through human will. The human will is the instrument of God. With this sincere exercise of reason and conscience, these three concepts run like continuous thread in the writings of the mature Rizal, much the same way he rejected divine rights of kings, the infallibility of the Pope, and that of the papal representatives in the Philippines. The infallibility of the Pope was the result of the convention in 1870. He counseled the youth of Malolos not to follow blindly whatever the friar said, but to understand their own experiences and sieve through their own reason and conscience. Friars, he said, they're also humans made of flesh and bones and possess the same frailties like us, unquote. Rizal endeavored to counteract the indoctrination propagated by the friars that molded people into submissive, obedient, humble, and mindless flock and prone to passivity. The characters of Maria Clara is one of them, but actually, when I was in high school, my teacher told us, she is the poodle Filipina. But if we read carefully the portrayal of Maria Clara, she is portrayed like the submissive, obedient, humble, mindless, and passive, always the object of male manipulation. Anyway, indoctrinated only to believe the friars, they are credulous of miracles, events, and the Noli and Philip very... There are many funny episodes of people, the credulous people, who believe all these miraculous events and superstitions. Because he was against this, because he said, people lose their self-confidence and ability to question and reason. So he was not in favor of the doctrine of faith only in Christianity. This was an abomination to Rizal, for Christianity was supposed to elevate the human spirit and endow it with spark of intelligence and energy so that they can strive for the same dignity as other human beings in the world. In other words, he thought of the struggle in the Philippines as part of the struggle of all humanity everywhere else. So there, we don't have to talk about transnational globalization. He thought that all morals, things that will uplift human dignity, is part of all humanity. And I think that is not taught by the global multinational firms. The inspiration to raise the human spirit is Jesus Christ. Christ to Rizal was a or more both divine and human, but he stressed the human part of Rizal, the human aspect of Jesus Christ. To Rizal, it is Christ's humanity that makes him more accessible to the common tao and serves as the exemplary hero. And this is one of the reasons why Father Pastels was really wanted to castigate him. Rizal scorned adoration of idols, of Christ, and the saints. He believed that time and energy spent in prolonged prayers, novenas, procession, veladas, and all the elaborate rituals ought to be used for more productive economic and social activities. Instead, he said that the best way to express one's devotion was to emulate Christ through good deeds. Do good towards your fellow men, he said. This is central to his understanding of the Christian ethos. In his hymn to labor, he wrote a long long poem sent in the town fiesta in Batangas. And this poem, Man's Road to Progress and Perfection, he advocated the improvement of the poor and giving labor a fair share of the profits of production. So it's really a hymn to labor. He wanted to change the attitudes, habits, and beliefs of the countrymen and women who tended to believe and rely on magic. And in the Noli, Elias spoke these scathing words against superstitious practices. Do you call these external practices faith? or that business in cords and scapulars religion, or the stories of miracles and other fairy tales that we hear every day as truth? Is this the law of Jesus Christ? A God did not have himself to be crucified for this, nor we assume the obligation of eternal gratitude. Superstition existed long before this. All that was needed was to perfect it and to raise the price of the merchandise. So, yeah, obliquely he was criticizing the business of novenas and all stampitas in the church. He showed that there is no causal relationship between the state of our morality or piety on one hand and natural disasters and misfortunes on the other. Natural calamities like typhoons, earthquakes, and volcanic eruptions are unavoidable. They are beyond human control. On the other hand, humans must take responsibility for social aberrations, cruelties, abuses, and injustice. They are the consequences of human lassitude, indifference, greed, and error. Since God endowed humans with reason and dignity, hence, to fight for one's honor, for one's rights and freedom, is tantamount to religious devotion. I quote, "There are no tyrants where there are no slaves." I think most students are made to memorize this. Following his reasoning, to rebel against tyranny, oppression, and injustice is a Christian duty. It is a duty that one must pursue, even at the cost of one's life. While he exhorted people to strive and use their native reason as the best means to reach God, he did not ridicule nor condemn church-going and all religious rituals and liturgies. Rizal appreciated sincere acts of piety and devotion, having observed these practices in his mother and sisters. While studying in Spain, and even during his exile in the Pitan, Rizal attended Mass and celebrated Christian holidays. It is part of his makeup that he remembered the pleasant experiences he had as a child. But he interpreted all of this participation in church rituals as more as a continuity of the pleasant experiences he had under the tutelage of his very pious mother, devoted mother. What he criticized was sanctimonious performance of novenas, processions, ceremonials that distract and waylay people from deeper understanding of God and examining the meaning of his human existence. During this time, the prevailing frailocracy prohibited all civic associations and organizations except those related to the church and those initiated and supervised by the friars. So stifling was the social climate that civic associations and similar activities were forced underground. Even the Association of Masons, whose membership were mainly professionals and intellectuals, were denounced and charged as subversive by the church. Some of the best, finest Filipinos were Masons, Emilio Aguinaldo, Apolinario, and Rizal himself. Anyway, the Masons actually played a very minor role in the revolution, but it was the friars were so frightened that they were afraid of the Masons. Very mild organization. What made the religious orders in the Philippines harbor intense fear and hatred of such moderate organizations like the Masons, like La Liga Filipina, and all people who were publishing articles critical of the religion? Violent political upheavals in Europe and Spain provoked their paranoia. The friar orders, having been expelled from Spain, remember, by 1815, Mexico was free. There was a long decade of revolution in Cuba from 1816 to 1876, and then Cuba was fighting. I'm just wondering, why was Rizal going to Cuba? Did he know what the Cubans were fighting for? Was he going there to escape? We don't know. So this is one of the enigmas I want to find out. Maybe Ambet will find out for me. All right. The friars' orders, having been expelled from Spain, found refuge in the Philippines, the colonial outpost where they thought they would escape the political and religious upheavals in Spain and in Europe. Bent on holding on to their properties and privileges that they could no longer maintain in their homeland, The friar orders became overtly suspicious, defensive, and paranoid. They persecuted Masons and all those they suspected of as their enemies, that only exacerbated opposition of the victims and brought about the organization of the Katipunan. Hundreds of Filipinos were killed, of course, and so on. I do not have to go this. All right. Regardless of Rizal's scathing criticism of the church, Rizal was profoundly spiritual. I don't know why people always divide between spirit and mind and spirit, body and soul. In actual life, in Asian philosophy, how can you have spirit without your body? Your body is your spirit. It's a vehicle of the divine. But this is a analytical, philosophical category in Western thought. Much as he gave the greatest importance to human capacity to reason, to human capacity for self-improvement, he believed in God. Whatever was God, he reversed the saying that humans are made in the image of God. Rizal reversed it, said, "Oh God, God is made through the human image. In other words, we create God. We define God." So he reversed it, and that made Father Pastel very angry. He expounded his belief in God in his letters to Pablo Pastel. This is now the mature Rizal, and he's been there more than 3 years. And it is important to remember that Father Pastel must have had a hand in choosing the place of exile, because the Pitan, the northern coast of Mindanao, had already a long mission effort by the Jesuits all the way to northern Agusan, all the way to Caraga. The Jesuits very been active in northern Mindanao. Not only that, they had a going on a very strong settlement of Christians in northern Mindanao. So Father Pastel must have had a hand in choosing the place of exile, so he will not collaborate with the Muslims. He was the head of the Society of Jesus, the one who sent him to his death in order that he might find, quote-unquote, salvation. During the period of exile in the Pitan, and up to the last hours before Rizal's execution, Father Pastel strove to bring him back to Catholicism and sent him several religious books. And Rizal was very conciliatory. It's already time. Anyway, I will just close by, anyway, the essay is available in the CD, although I keep revising it. Let me just give some summary after I have listened to my colleagues. One, his religious ideas develop in stages. The young Rizal, very devoted Christian, and he followed his Jesuit mentors. But later on, as he matured, he began to question everything and took up a sense of leadership. He was very courageous, and he said, "Why is it that we are made only objects of theology, objects of philosophy, objects of the ministrations of other people?" He said, "We should take the leadership, and we must philosophize. We have to develop our own philosophy, our own doctrines." And also, another aspect that is important is that he believed that religion should be something that is practiced in daily life, and it should not be used as the Europeans used it, particularly in Asia, in Africa, to enslave people and to justify their imperialist plunder. All right. So these are the ones that, when Alexander VI divided the globe into possessions of Portuguese and Spain, that was globalization. Globalization to me, at least, was globalization defined by the West. We were already global before the Europeans arrived. We were trading by the at least by the 10th century from the archaeological finds. We were trading not only inter-island. You can see objects, artifacts made in Luzon, in Mindanao, and Mindanao artifacts brought to Luzon. Not only was there inter-island shipping, because there are many, many types of art of pottery. For example, you can see Laguna pottery exported all the way to Mindanao and Bohol. The collections are in the, I hope you will go to the National Library, a National Museum, because it showed there very early there was inter-island trade. Not only was there inter-island trade, there was overseas trade. We were trading as far, all the way to China and Southeast Asia, and also remember that we were very active in the transshipment point from the Spice Islands all the way to China, and also with Arabs. So it is important that our study of Rizal should include not only what his personal life was, but to continue his work. And that is, number one, do comparative studies. We tend to think of the Philippines in isolation from Borneo, Brunei Darussalam, from the Sultanate of Brunei. We tend to overlook the documents from Mindanao and also the archaeology, and we do not incorporate, for example, Chinese accounts are very important, because up to the time of the American domination, the Muslims were trading with China, and the Chinese were coming to Sulu and Mindanao, and that the Sulu-Mindanao people had relations with the rest of Southeast Asia. And up to today, people in Mindanao consider themselves more part of Southeast Asia. In other words, to understand Philippine developments, we must do also other Southeast Asian countries. For example, our traders from Luzon would stop in Champa. Champa was South Vietnam, absorbed in the late 14th century by the Northern Vietnamese, but there was close relationship between the people of Luzon and Champa. That means that our documents should not be confined only to Spanish or American, but we have to study Babad, Hikayat, and Chinese accounts, and Portuguese accounts are also important, because when the Portuguese arrived in Malacca, there were Lusoes there, and they fought on the side of Sultan Mahmud, and then they also escorted Sultan Mahmud to find refuge in Johor and the Riau archipelago. In other words, we are not using all the available documents and artifacts and archaeological finds, very important to understanding our relationship. Not only that, I think Rizal, especially his exile in the Pitan, showed that our disciplines should be part of field work. And it is very important that our study should not be confined in documents and books, but we have to go out to the field and see how the people live. And Rizal experience in the Pitan, he was a good carpenter. He also learned a lot about agriculture. He learned agriculture, by the way. And also made irrigation works and so on. In other words, this theory and practice, this division is not very good for our discipline. And not only that, I think Rizal also was very much aware that our struggle in our country is part of the human effort to uplift all people of the world, and that it is this struggle that is the best religion. Thank you.